It's March 31st, 2014, and you're listening to episode 72 of Free to Play. My name is Brian Belita, and I'm debating if I'd want to do an April Fool's joke tomorrow, or today if you're listening to this tomorrow, or today if you're listening to this today. If you're listening to this on April 1st, it's tomorrow. If you're listening to this on March 31st, it's today. I'm also joined by tonight, Imran Khan. No, wait, Mark Bradshaw.
The podcast that would not be blown apart by Mountain Dew, probably. Drink Mountain Dew, kids. Come on.
God,
just drink it.
Imran Khan.
Mountain Dew.
Mountain Dew.
Drink it. Mountain Dew.
David Owen.
Mountain Dew.
Let's do it.
Oh, God damn it. And Matt Pierce.
This episode is brought to you by Dr. Brown's Black Cherry Cola.
is that a real thing?
It is.
Dr. Brown's is awesome.
It's a Northeast thing. The problem with Dr. Brown's Black Cherry Cola.
What is this about Mountain Brown's?
Yes,
Mountain Brown's. Oh, God. Hey,
Mountain
look.
Brown's dark.
Do we have some beef?
There's beef to be had here.
His cherry dew. It's not. It's better than it sounds. Admittedly, it sounds horrible.
Man, I saw some video of some guy drinking like a 25-year-old unopened bottle of Crystal Pepsi.
Did he die?
I think he may have gone to the emergency room.
Yeah, you know why? He drank a 25-year-old soda that was a century old.
Spoiler, soda goes bad.
literal spoilers.
It's like you couldn't drink water that was 25 years old. Like, that water also spoils, so this is
Mark,
water with stuff in it.
Mark, yeah. All the water we drink is billions of years old.
Well, yeah, but that's like being filtered. Like,
I learned that listening to Neil deGrasse Tyson's Cosmos. I didn't learn that on Neil deGrasse Tyson's Cosmos.
Excuse me, sir. I think you actually believe that all the water you drink is nearly 6,000 years old.
6,500 or whatever.
When you guys put it in the ground next to those extra deep fossils to lead you off track.
Have you all been watching that, Cosmos?
Yes.
It's really good.
Not watch. I'm still not ready to accept Neil deGrasse Tyson as the new Carl Sagan. I just don't want to do that in my heart.
You don't have to. I mean,
he's like Carl Sagan, but not, you know, boorish.
Neil deGrasse Tyson doesn't present himself as a replacement for Carl Sagan, but somebody who admires Carl Sagan.
Yeah.
And it's all done with a lot of humility, and it's kind of refreshing that they don't pretend like he's the new Carl Sagan. They pretend, they act like, oh, we're just going to try to carry on that legacy.
Yeah. Neil deGrasse Tyson put his life on the line riding a bike through the Italian countryside.
He also appears regularly on Big Bang Theory, so it's hard for me to take him seriously.
Big Bang. Anyways, so it's episode 72, and things have happened in this past week.
Things in regional sodas? Can we talk about regional sodas?
We can absolutely talk about what's a regional?
So why the fuck is Cheerwine only in North Carolina?
It's not just in North Carolina. I mean, it's like in Georgia. You can get
it's like it's a religion there. It's like, you know, like technically there's Christianity in China, but it's not, you know, the same.
Well, the simple answer is that
Cheerwine.
Yes. I absolutely am.
The simple answer is that Cheerwine is the best drink possible. So when you have something that's better than water, it's worth like worshiping. So
preach it.
Yeah.
So I've had Cheerwine, and I've got to say, you're full of shit.
Okay, where did you have Cheerwine at?
North Carolina.
Someone explain
you're a heathen. I can't deal with that.
What is Cheerwine?
It's a cherry flavored soda.
Sure, you can say that. It's more than that.
So it has absolutely nothing to do with the alcoholic beverage wine.
This is a very confusing concept. It was confusing to me when I was like 5 years old. I said, oh, I can't drink cheer wine. It's got wine in it. I can't drink this. No wonder everybody loves it.
You were the most prudish 5 year old. Keep that away from me.
Well,
also, I'm going to sit at home
quietly.
When you're
five, you think alcohol's going to kill you.
Also, I grew up in a Baptist household in the South when I was 5 years old. Yeah, it was a little prudish.
I can't have alcohol. That's only for adults.
Meanwhile, people just drinking Cheerwine like crazy. It's like, oh my god, society's gone to hell.
So when I was in Oregon, I went to a burger place, and like, they asked me what I wanted to drink. I said, oh, I'll have a Coke. They said, like, usually they ask if they don't have Coke, like, is Pepsi okay? This time they asked me, is RC Cola okay?
Yes.
Which, like, I was literally taken aback. I was like, I don't know how to enter that. Sure. Okay, fine.
Was it disgusting?
I hope so.
I mean, it tasted
mostly
like...
mostly sugar?
Yeah, it was sugary Coke. That's what it tasted like. But I've never seen a place that's like, yeah, we're going to... Maybe that speaks to the hipsterism of Portland.
Right. Is is Bob's Cola okay? Is organic soda all right?
Well, no. RC is Canadian, right? It's...
I think it's Texan, actually.
No. It stands for Royal Crown.
Sure. I mean, you can have a king in Texas.
I thought it was named after, like, the queen.
Well, we
developed in Georgia.
Yeah. What?
Oh.
I never would have guessed that.
My God.
It turns out all regional sodas are developed in the South.
Apparently.
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much.
Like, we just do not give a shit about health.
I guess a regional soda is just like a local... I've never heard the word regional soda before.
Well, why aren't there like microbrews for soda?
Yeah.
Regional anymore. It used to be this thing where like, the company that bottles it can't truck it very far because they have no freaking money. But now that's cheap.
I mean, I know you say like soda brews or whatever, but I mean, there is sort of like this organic soda movement that's, I don't know, been happening for a while. One of my friends from DC, David Coulter from Thick Mustache, and he runs the Hollywood Fun Pitch Time now. One of his friends that ran this Kickstarter that was pretty successful for organic soda, which
there's
is kind of
like
interesting.
Jones Cola, which is kind of a hippie cola.
Yeah, I drank a lot of Jones Soda back in the day.
I don't know, I think it's probably something you don't realize if you don't actually drink like a lot of soda, because I get the feeling you drink water, like some kind of...
I do.
Savage.
Water, yeah. Water is the magic potion.
Why don't you just like eat like raw
water.
Leaves?
I'm just hedging my bet. Just only water and soda.
You what?
I'm hedging my bet. Just all I drink is water and soda. There was a brief period of time where I gave up soda, and then that didn't last.
I'm pretty much I am 60% water, 30% coffee,
crack.
And 10% IBC cream soda.
Okay, IBC creams. I can respect IBC.
Yeah.
I think if I actually broke it down, I'm drinking like 75% coffee at this point.
See, there was a point where I was like, okay, I should drink healthy. I'm going to get like these V8 things. And it's like three times the cost of soda, but like...
Seriously, just drink water.
Yeah, that's... Just get heavy into water.
There are a lot of people that are like, but I need the flavor, man, or whatever. And it's just for a week straight, just drink water. And you will learn to love it so much.
The problem is people who are already dependent on it, like I have caffeine headaches, so I don't drink soda. So don't people like, okay, you'll have to give up this thing you like that isn't really causing you that much damage. And also it's going to be really, really fucking hard, like you're giving up meth.
Also, just learn how to drink coffee and your life will be so much better.
Coffee tastes bad.
No,
I am not a fan of coffee. Like there's certain kinds of coffee that I think is okay tasting, but also you can't drink coffee with anything. Like... Drinking it with a hot meal just makes you feel worse.
Coffee and banana goes really well together. I don't know what it is. Like when I eat a banana, I really want a cup of coffee. If I'm drinking a cup of coffee, I really want a banana.
Like the banana in the coffee or just...
No. I mean, I'm just, I'm consuming them. I don't want to say at the same time because I'm not. I'm not just like, let me make a straw out of this banana.
Wait, why don't you do that?
Banana
straw in coffee.
Banana straw.
Then go to Portland and open up a restaurant.
Right, I'll call it Banana and Straw.
Straw-dana.
Have you guys seen that? Steve, there's, I don't know, like everyone sends Steve Gaynor these like images of companies that are two words with an ampersand, like a bun and patty for like a burger place. And because Steve Gaynor just thinks it's the absolute worst, marketing name or whatever in the history of the world. So
Steve Gaynor, also from Portland.
Steve Gaynor, also from Portland. Yes, he should have called his I don't know, Fulbright and company.
And we need him to fund the VC for our banana and straw.
Right, banana and straw. Yeah.
Or the straw man. Just call it the straw man. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah. I saw one that I think it may have been a bar. I think it was called Duck and Cover or something like that. That one I kind of enjoyed. It had an actual duck on the sign.
Was it like a World War II theme? Like
you eat in trenches and
World War II theme bar.
It was a cute reference to their obscene cover charges.
Can we see the ovens? No.
Oh,
no, you don't. You did say World War II theme. There's only so many World War II things you can go with.
It probably exists. You know what? It probably almost definitely exists.
With a cape or a knife. That's just
anyways.
Triple cheeseburger and call it the Bulge.
Speaking of triple cheeseburgers, Facebook and Oculus VR.
Yeah. So Facebook, the company, bought Oculus, the company.
For $2,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000
$100 million in cash and $1.6 billion in stocks. Yeah.
No, not stocks. Stock options. So in the end, it's $400 million in cash. And if Oculus wants to spend money to buy Facebook stock, they get $1.6 billion worth of it at reduced price. So it's not like they got $2 billion from Facebook. It's just that that's the total valuation of the offer that they could eventually take advantage of.
I'm not sure that's a great deal, then.
Well, $400 million to buy
part's good.
That's a pretty good deal. $2 billion sounded ridiculous, and then when you read it, it's like, oh yeah, that is ridiculous. It's wrongly reported.
Now wait a minute, like, okay, now I'm an idiot about this sort of thing, so, but isn't buying like Facebook stock at a reduced price a good thing?
It assumes
Facebook stock is going to do great in the future.
Well, no, you're buying it at lower than market price, so as soon as you buy it, you've made a profit.
Okay.
The trick is that, one, this would increase investment in Facebook, which would help their stock's price. And two, Oculus is going to have to start making money in order to have money to buy stock options with. So it's something that they can't exercise for a few years.
So they just have the right to buy X amount of X dollars worth of stock. They don't have anything. They just have the $400 million.
They have $400 million.
And at some point they can buy stock.
Which, to be honest, $400 million is a ridiculously large cash infusion to a company like Oculus.
Can they just fuck them over and just like buy $400 million worth of Facebook stock and just walk away?
No, probably not. When you buy stock in a stock option, there's usually a minimum amount of time you're required to hold it before selling it.
Yeah. There was immediate backlash when this first came out, and I think a lot of it was coming from people who backed Oculus on Facebook.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On Kickstarter.
Yeah, thank you. And
which I don't think is particularly valid, because Kickstarter had a very clear, defined goal.
I mean, that's what I was going to say. I think there are a lot of people that don't understand. Yeah.
They think they're investing.
They think they're venture capitalists.
Well, but, I mean, the thing is, like, nowhere does it say you're getting stock options in the company or, you know, you have a part of it. I think because of the framework of Kickstarter, and I've said this before, that you may create unrealistic expectations because it's this magical thing that you've pulled together and you've helped fund and bring to market and everything. It's a normal company. It has to do certain things to survive.
You created a corporate thing in a corporate world, and other corporations took it.
Yeah. So there was a lot of backlash from that.
Well, apparently the CEO of Oculus Rift, or whatever title he has, said that the people on the board had been running the company for quite some time by the time this buyout happened. So, I mean, they were basically being run by the stockholders at that point.
Yeah.
So I mean, apparently this whole thing happened during GDC week.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, that's a pretty short period for, you know, negotiations and all that. What, but
did you guys see John Carmack's post about it, about the whole thing?
I saw a quote that was just like, yeah, Facebook gets it.
Right. Well, I was talking about, I mean, he was talking about, he was like, yeah, I met Zark Buckerberg, you know, Zark Buckerberg.
Drinking a brown Mike's Cola.
Brian Belita's dyslexia strikes again. So what you don't know is that I also squished the first letters of my name there. Anyways, he spent an afternoon talking with the technology, with Mark Zuckerberg. And, you know, then he finds out that he bought Oculus. But there was some interesting stuff in Carmack's post. I can't speak to whether it'll be good, bad for the business. I mean, probably good. I mean, obviously, Oculus is going to get more cash influx.
Facebook, the company, tends not to fuck around with things it buys.
Yeah. No, $2 billion is not a light investment.
Well, I mean, like, when they buy something, they'll just leave it be, let it do whatever it wants, as long as it makes money for them.
To an extent. Yeah. When they bought Instagram, the first thing they forced Instagram to do is stop supporting Twitter.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, okay,
extent, but Instagram otherwise has been left to its own device.
Instagram is a social competitor to Facebook.
Yeah.
So I can see the reason for that. Like, there's nothing Oculus is doing that would be competitive to their end goals.
Until they release their own game store.
I'm calling it right now. In 5 years, we're going to see an announcement for a console called the Facebox.
No.
Yes.
No.
No.
I think at some point you're going to see Oculus integration with Facebook games.
Yeah.
I think that Facebook is going to support the Oculus headsets.
But the key is support and not like mandate. Yeah.
Well, hopefully. And I think that's where a lot of people initially went to. There are a lot of people that do not like Facebook. They did not like this news.
Well, a little bit of why I'm cringing at it is.
Yeah.
Oculus is going to make somebody rich, and it annoys me that the person it's going to make slightly more rich now is Mark Zuckerberg.
Right. And outside of whether it's going to be good or bad for the company or what sort of integration there's going to be, the fact that it was Facebook caught them a lot of flack. I mean, they had built up so much goodwill with themselves, with hiring John Carmack and just everything they were doing. There were a lot of, you know, and then all of a sudden in that one day, it just dropped. All that goodwill that they had bought up just sort of disappeared and everyone.
The flip side of the coin is that they were apparently worried that they were not going to be able to sell this thing at cost. And if they can't sell it at cost, like let's say cost is $300, mm-hmm. which is what they were thinking. Then if they needed to make a profit, then they would have been $350, $400. And a price that premium might have just completely tanked the VR idea.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very fragile thing, then they have to introduce it just right. And if they introduce it at a price that's way too high, then that could have been equally bad.
Well, they can't sell it like for the price of a new console, because people are just going to look and say, this is stupid, I'm just going to buy a new console.
Like, apparently Zuckerberg's pitch to them was, we can help you sell this at cost.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Hopefully it'll end up cheaper.
Get costs down, too, because right now they're having some part supply issues.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if that's what it does, I mean, if it brings down the cost, that's great. I mean, I think a lot of people immediately jump to, oh man, there's going to be forced Facebook integration or something like that. Which
probably there might still be. The question is like, will that ultimately matter? I mean,
I don't think you can have a peripheral that connects to the PC that will have forced anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, not one that will do well. So, I mean, if it lowers the cost and helps them develop it, you know, further and more, then that's great.
If it makes you log into Facebook, I guarantee you the second day, somebody will find a way to make you not log into Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think Facebook may have been also looking at this from, you know, I don't know, log into Facebook with your Oculus and watch a movie with your loved one from across the world or something like that.
So have they said, like, is this going to affect the thing where that we're interested in? Like, it's still going to be there. It's still to play the same games that we want to play. It's still going to be
as far as we know.
Neither Facebook nor Oculus have announced any changes to what they were planning to do before this. So Facebook hasn't announced anything they're planning to do with Oculus besides fund it and share in the profits, and Oculus hasn't announced any sort of change to what they're planning to do with the headsets.
No.
And even if it just comes out and starts as a gaming device and then moves on to other things, as long as it starts as a gaming device, it'll stay a gaming device.
Well, yeah, you're kind of talking about two things. You're talking about the hardware peripheral that we all want to have to hook up to regular old video games,
mm-hmm.
and then some sort of application that's going to connect it into Facebook. As long as you can still play games with it without having to use that Facebook integration, I'm totally cool with that.
So Kotaku,
Kotaku headline right here, is the Oculus Rift the new Origin?
I mean, it's not going to take that long for anyone to jailbreak anything the Oculus Rift could do.
No.
Rift.
Yeah.
What was that? Dave?
Someone will root it, you know, within a week.
Oh, really?
If it has those sorts of, you know, requirements on it, someone will root it. I mean,
yeah.
You know, at this point, from where we are right now, it's just purely a business decision.
Yeah.
You know, it's the way that they – it's the best way that they seem to see to get this thing to the market.
Well, I did hear
The other thing that that I know Matt brought up that he's actually more worried about is that they also recently announced the hire of Michael Abrash.
Yeah. Now, I don't have anything against Michael Abrash, but in the announcement of his hiring and all of this talk of Facebook, everybody surrounding Oculus at this point is talking about the metaverse, which is Neil Stephenson's word for cyberspace. And
which is William Gibson's word for the internet.
Yeah. So like this idea that we're going to all put on goggles and live in the internet, and everybody's talking about how wonderful it'll be, and Oculus is finally going to make it happen. And I'm just sitting there, it's like, no, this is what killed VR in the 90s. This idea that we were all going to go live in the internet is what made VR stupid, and then it's why we stopped investing in it.
Well, it's always been the cyberpunk author's dream, because, you know, you had Neil Stephenson, who's big into this. William Gibson played around with it for a little bit. I forget the guy who made the series, Tad Williamson, who the Mountain of Black Glass, Tower of Glass series. But it's always been this thing of writers who don't really know a lot about how people interact with the internet or how gamers really want to like interact with their games. It's always been the writer's idea. And when you put it in reality, it doesn't work out very well because you know, people don't want to be stuck behind this screen for the rest of their lives, basically.
No. That's the thing. It's not a fantasy or an end goal. It's a plot device.
That's the mainstream thinks that what gamers want or why they play video games is pure escapism. And so they think that the end goal for all of that is putting on a head-mounted display and headphones and like, oh my god, I'm actually in this MMORPG. Yeah. But like, I don't want that. No.
What we want is, oh my god, I can see depth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or I can use my head to look around.
Yeah, or I can turn my head and it's not going to like, you know, turn away from the screen.
Or I don't have to spend like $1,000 on a nice TV. I can just buy these goggles.
I have a wide field of view without buying a wall-sized TV.
That's true, yeah.
I have a dorm room and don't need a 50-inch TV.
that said, like, all the images from the 90s of gamers were just this wild man, like, popped up on energy drinks with the VR headset this plastered onto him with it.
Well, it was like Lawnmower Man. That like everyone had that vision of Lawnmower Man as being the future of gaming, and it's like, no,
I will never understand this about the 90s, but have you ever noticed how whenever you see somebody using VR in like a TV show or a movie from the 90s, you're wearing this head-mounted display that blocks out all external stimuli, right? Mm-hmm. Or at least that was the idea. But they play it in a dark room.
Yeah.
Why? You can't see the lights outside of your headset. Why are you playing? What?
Because movies, Matt.
Also, you don't want people to see you like looking.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, that's a fair point.
Yeah, come into my hacker cave. Feel like that would do and sad.
Set the world on fire.
Some people worrying that this was just a talent grab by Facebook, that they were just going to grab these guys and we were never actually going to see the product.
Yeah, that's a bigger valid concern, that they would grab all the talent up and then dissolve the company.
If that's the case, and I think that there's going to be people who are dedicated to that idea that are going to leave when their contract is up and go and do this somewhere else, or that like the tips Valve gave Oculus, or that they'll just give to somebody else and they'll do their own thing.
It's like Sony is like most of the way there right now with their own device. Yeah. I mean, they'll forget about it in 6 months, like do everything, but it's there.
If it exists,
and it can be like put into a PC, then that's going to be good for everybody regardless.
Yeah, the reason why no one can play around now is that Sony just has to get there with the display. They have the hardware to power the games. They have the game distribution network. They have the ability to standardize everything. You know, you're going to have to be quick to market to beat that.
But
Sony they were demoing the Morpheus in Japan by showing off an Idolmaster thing where you're just hanging out in the room with other idols.
And
honestly, that's pretty brilliant. Yeah, that's a good way to get VR adoption going. Like that nerdy thing that you wanted to do but don't want to tell anyone you want to do, you can do this here.
Totally, the first application is going to be VR porn.
And the only tool though is whoever maintains the PSN servers.
I think it was it Chris Thurston? I think wrote an article about like cyber sex using the Oculus Rift. No, it wasn't Christopherson. I'm sorry. I'm blanking on who it was. I'm sorry about
Bill
that.
Bill Stevens. But,
so anyways, he you know, he learned the word teledildonic.
Oh, yes. That's actually a term that's been around for a while. He didn't invent the term, but yeah.
It was Andy Kelly, who writes for PC Gamer.
I mean, it's going to happen, whether it's just webcams and 3D or something. I was going to say deeper, but I feel like I should choose my words more carefully in this conversation.
Just some guy just like taping his tablet to the front of a baseball cap and just, hey, it's right in my face. I can't get away from it. Nothing. Yeah.
But no, so before we started recording, we were talking about this on the Oculus VR blog, on their post about Michael Abrash joining them. They have this photo of Michael Abrash and then John Carmack. And like just looking at what they're wearing in the image, it totally looks like it's from like the mid-90s. I mean, as Matt pointed out, other than John Carmack's lack of beautiful, long, flowing hair, he just got like the short shirts, just looks like a 90s.
I wonder if John Carmack knows that he was a fashion plate. Like every programmer I knew in the 90s wanted to have a long John Carmack ponytail.
My question is this. Which chambers was it his ponytail or, as Brian said, John Romero's ponytail?
Well, John Romero has a ponytail because he just kind of let it loose.
Yeah, he just had the flowing hair.
Yeah.
It's all gone. It's just short hair and fedoras, and everything's terrible.
You mean trophies? So,
yes.
Trophies. We'll know how this Facebook buyout went out in like a year or two if Carmack leaves. Because if it's not like going to his rigid specifications, I think that's when he's gonna be like, well, I'm just gonna wait my contract out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about him anymore. Like,
he doesn't need the payday, so.
No, but he left id.
Right.
You know, the company he founded and didn't leave in its worst hours in order to do this thing with Facebook. Now, granted, a lot of the reason he left is that he had some big creative differences with ZeniMax. So I could see him leaving Oculus if he has creative differences with Facebook. But, you know, he left a big part of his life behind to devote into this thing. And I don't think he's going to be so willing to leave it.
Well, I mean, in his quotes, he even said, talking about the quote unquote titans that would buy Oculus, that he didn't expect it to be this soon and didn't really expect Facebook. So we'll see what happens for that. Cause he's obviously really smart and an opinionated guy. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
It's already negatively affected gamers because now we're not going to get Minecraft for Oculus Rift. There's going to be like a different Minecraft.
Well, there's actually like just a Minecraft mod that works for Oculus Rift.
Yeah.
So it's already there. Not just wanting to make an official version.
Yeah, just 7,000 clones.
Yeah.
Not just one where he did not approve.
I mean, and on one hand, I totally like go notch, do whatever you want, but you can't say Facebook's creepy and also get into bed with Microsoft.
You're right. You're totally right.
Like, one makes you a lot of money and the other one doesn't, so I can see why, but it's not terribly consistent.
Everybody's corrupt, everything is terrible.
Yep.
It's corporate.
So, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm glad no one really kind of...
I'm glad I didn't put the money down on Crystal Cove, because, I mean, at this point... Because Zuckerberg was saying some things about Oculus not being a saleable product in the next 3-4 years. Which seems like a really long time. I assumed it was going to be like next year.
That's also one of the things that killed id. Ridiculously long development times.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know why it would take so long for it to be a saleable product. I mean, given what they've put out as a dev kit and what everybody's been able to produce using that dev kit, I don't know how it's not ready for market right this second.
Maybe they're just trying to get costs down.
Well, I mean, can't anyone just buy a dev kit? I mean, a quote-unquote dev kit.
Sort of.
It's about $300 and, like, there's a latency tester with it, which is a lot of the cost.
Right.
Now, we're talking about, like, the high-quality screen one. We're not talking about the SD version. It could be that they just take the screens out.
I think there's a waiting list now. But once they get their supply issues, then you can still buy a dev kit.
It's sort of already on the market. I mean, if anyone can buy it, I don't know.
But I think they're probably still having, like, from everything I've heard, the big bottleneck is latency.
Yeah. Like, and they're never going to get rid of it because it's just inherent to the USB bus. And you just you can't get rid of it. It's just too bad at this point.
I think Sony's solution might actually be better of having a camera tracking the head movements.
If it's still connected through USB.
I mean, it's not going to get rid of it completely, but it might be better than...
It's probably going to have higher latency than just using accelerometers. What John Carmack's been trying to do is predictive tracking. Predict where your head is going to be, and then adjust the viewpoint for where it thinks your head is going to be when the frame actually makes it to the screen.
That sounds like a good idea until it doesn't work. Then it would be incredibly disorienting.
Well, it doesn't work unless you're, like, super, super fast.
Well, apparently it's a little overlay. We're sorry. Did you mean to move your head here?
It's apparently disorienting when you shake back and forth, but when you're looking around, it's fine.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you don't.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there might be some horror game that's like, you know, shake to get the zombie off you.
I just really want this thing to work, and I want it to be something I can buy.
Yeah, me too.
There seems to be a lot of options out there. I would point out, though, that pretty much everything is disorienting if you shake your head around a lot. So it's probably not a big
problem. Better than coffee. So the other big news that I don't know, maybe the other big news this week, that I just caught kind of the tailwind just before I had to leave work today, before coming home and doing everything before podcasting tonight, was this game jam thing.
Yeah. There was a TV show that apparently Zoe Quinn and a few other big name indie people in the scene were developing. I suppose like the Iron Chef of gaming development. You know, you'd have four teams, a set number of time to develop a game, and you know, in developers' minds, this is going to be a neat little thing to show people the inside workings of developing a video game, because this is an intensely personal thing, especially the game jam.
Tonight's ingredient, Unity.
And of course, being like TV, they decided to completely ruin it, and basically, it was the marketing director who completely blew this thing up for the guys.
How so? Like, how is it such a crash and burn?
Well, the marketing director basically went, because you had the team with Zoe Quinn on it, and she was, as far as I understand, she was like the only lady on the team, or like there was like a couple others, the four teams, and she just kept pushing this idea that the team with the lady on it was going to be at an inherent disadvantage. And of course, the other developers in the indie community are saying, "Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Zoe Quinn, she's fucking amazing. We're not going to be a problem at all." And they just kept on and on. Just the marketing director just kept pushing like a hostile environment during the development of this, because you know.
So in their messaging, like saying, "Now this team is at a disadvantage while they work on this secret game jam."
We don't know because it blew up on the first day, so we don't know what the end result was going to be, but it's basically just them pushing the teams themselves. You know how, I don't know if you guys watch a reality TV, but you know, it can't just be harmonious. It just can't be like a bunch of people who like each other doing a thing and then something beautiful comes out at the end. There's got
to
be some.
I didn't come here to make friends.
Yeah.
Oh. But apparently came here to make enemies.
Came here to make enemies and video games.
Do people win game jams? Like, is that an actual competition? I thought people just go in there and
it depends.
Make games.
Usually game jam. Yeah, I mean, it's just a bunch of people getting together, and sometimes they, I don't know, I guess, have people that vote and stuff. But
yeah, some of the ones,
Not like a cutthroat competition.
Yeah, no, Ludum Dares are like competitions.
The Dares, like, that's a big one. But yeah, most of the time it's just, hey, everybody show what you did. Aren't we all cool? You know,
I know Rami Ismail and a bunch of people. They just did this train jam where, like, I don't know how long it was. Do you know how long it was, Dave?
I think it was 72 hours. Because they took a train from Boston. So it's actually a couple of the people that were in this, Adriel Wallach and Zoe Quinn, and I think Rami was in it. And they took the train to GDC from Boston.
So they just like filled up an entire cab with all their laptops open making games, which is pretty cool, I think.
Yep. Yeah, really, really cool. But this whole thing is just, it's pretty crazy. I mean, it just looks like, you know, someone was looking for the story. I mean, there's some stuff in here because they've got different perspectives from a few of the people that were there. And, you know, they're talking about things like the guy just, you know, cutting people off in the middle of an interview because he wasn't getting a quote story. There's no story here. And yeah, constantly prodding and saying, well, you know, do you think you're going to be at a disadvantage with this girl on your team? Do you think she's going to carry her weight? And, you know, there's some talk of them because there were also YouTube personalities involved in this. I mean, it's Polaris, which is owned by Maker. And so they had a bunch of their personalities on there. Sam Strippin, John Tron, a couple other big names were on there. Mark Plyer. And, you know, they had a couple of YouTube guys, I think, and a couple of devs on each team. And apparently there was a little bit of a butting of heads between Zoe and John Tron, and they really tried to play that up. And even to the point when they tried to step off to the side and kind of work it out on their own, you know, the cameras are right there following them, you know, and they're trying to beg off, you know, for a little privacy to work this out. And they're trying to milk the story. So, you know, it's one of the things that I've heard people sort of summarize this with is this is how an old media person screws up a new media event. Yeah. You know, this guy is old school, old media, and he's looking for the conflict because he thinks that's what people want. And it's really not what the audience for this was looking for.
He's looking for a reality TV show. And
exactly.
People who, yeah. And it's just, it, number one, it's kind of a weird thing to like try to create this competition, because the point of a game jam is to produce a working product. If you can produce like something that runs and that's similar to a video game, you've kind of won your competition. Like, it doesn't matter what your score is. That's really all they're impressed by, that
you compete against yourself.
Yeah. I mean, and these guys just want to go, well, we want to create reality TV, and reality TV is inherently disgusting. Like,
it's
creates conflict. Yeah, it creates conflict. It creates drama. It's just, it's not how adults act. And they just say, oh, you got gamers, of course they're going to be edgy. It's like, nah, man, these are just indie developers. They just
hack the planet.
Yeah, hack the planet. It's like, no, that's not what they're about. They're about like getting along and producing content because they're collaborating, and you have to be a
Well, yeah, I mean like I much prefer watching friendship porn than I do some cutthroat competition or people being assholes.
Are you talking about ponies? Are you, Brian, what's going on here? No,
I'm talking about friendship porn. Just like, you know, you watch some people that you admire or look up to just like hanging out and making video games and doing cool things. And it's like, fuck, I wish I were their friends. And then maybe you get a little sad.
So the only thing I can think of like that is confession, I used to watch Project Runway with my wife.
Yeah.
There are some good reality shows. That's,
but
I mean,
Project Runway, when it started off, though, was all about these people have a really tight time limit and a really obscure really obscure sort of trend they have to meet, and they all have to produce an outfit in 24 hours. So you get to see them all do their separate things. And the first few seasons is all about, look at what these really creative people did in a really short time frame. And that was cool.
Yeah.
And then they said, we need drama. Let's put them on teams and try to make them fight. And it became an issue. And we stopped watching. Like,
well, I was going
to
say, so from what it sounds like, when Project Runway first started, it was just like a competition. Like, I don't know, American Gladiators. You see some people come on and they try to fight. And so a nightly thing. And yeah, I think the issue comes when they try to, you know, push relationships or people fighting or getting into it or whatever. Because like there's, you know, Andrew WK, he hosted a show for a while. I don't know if it's still going on. Destroy, Build, Destroy, right? And that's just, I don't know if you qualify that as reality TV, but it's like a one-off competition of, you know, kids destroying things, building things, and then destroying things again.
Yeah,
you know, there's not like a running character or set of characters.
Of course, the subplot to this is apparently there was a lot of Mountain Dew advertising going on in the background. Yeah.
Can I just say how kind of infuriating it is how shitty advertising is when it comes to games?
Yes.
Like, as soon as anybody hears that games are involved, not only not only does it have to be like Mountain Dew, you have to sell your soul to Mountain Dew to get a sponsorship.
Oh, yeah. No, they were talking about people being corrected on not holding the product correct, you know, right towards the camera, the label, how to smile, you know.
You're talking about product placement. You're not talking about actors filming a commercial. It's kind of absurd.
Also, it's a green bottle, for fuck's sake. You know it's Mountain Dew because it's in the green bottle.
Don't have that on the RC
Cola Rock.
So now, I mean, that's a really frustrating situation because I think most people went into it, you know, at least some of the people that were going to be in the show, Zoe Kanell and some of the actual game makers, hoping for something good, and it just got fucked. It just got.
They could easily make this show if they wanted to because people will prostrate themselves on TV voluntarily.
Yeah, it's just they.
They did it to people who did not want to be involved with that particular thing, which is, don't spring that on them.
Well, and I'm glad they've spoken up about it, and obviously, that's what they do, and that shift has happened over, the last 5 years, where things is, if something goes bad, just fucking on Twitter, this shit is fucked up, and then a lot of people. Rally behind it.
And that will change the image.
Which is good. And I hope it'll change, Have you guys heard about Super Game Jam?
What about Super Game Jam?
So Devolver, in all their craziness, are behind this film series. I think it's going to be 5 parts. It's a documentary series, which focuses on like 48-hour game jam. So in each of the episodes, two game developers who have never worked together before, which I thought was kind of neat. They must fight to the death while they try to make a playable game. I think it's going to be 5 40-minute episodes coming out on Steam every month from April on. We'll hopefully be a good version of what they wanted to do with this game jam thing.
And why it'll be the good version? Because it's not on network TV or cable TV.
That's a fair point.
Was like on TLC that said, this developer you're working with fucked your wife last night, then they.
That would be his game idea. That's a game theme. Fucked your wife.
Oh, God. Oh, man. Oh, jeez. The, I'm trying to think of the word. The infidelity jam? I don't know. I'm really looking forward to this. I don't know if it's going to be free, but I don't know. I kind of hope. I don't know. We'll see. If it's not, we'll see what the pricing is, and I'll probably buy it on Steam or whatever because I think it'll be good. It'd be really fun to watch.
Yeah. Definitely.
Well, they sold some of this stuff on the Humble Bundle before, right?
Devolver. Devolver also publishes movies. They have a publishing movie production branch as well.
They published the new Shadow Warrior, Hotline Miami, Luftrausers.
Wasn't Goat Simulator a Game Jam game?
I actually don't think so. I think it was just like, some company was made an engine and just made this to show off their tech, and then there was such. Rallying behind it, they're like, "Fuck! Oh, we'd probably make a killing if we actually make this game."
Goat Simulator was spawned out of Goat Jam.
Goat Jam.
Goat Jam.
I don't get it.
The Wikipedia article is not illuminating.
No.
Damn Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Well, so, kind of related to this, just real quick, this doesn't really bear much discussion, but Maker, who is the owner of Polaris, the YouTube network that put this whole thing on. Was last week purchased by Disney. So Disney now owns the largest content creator on YouTube. Games, movie review. Maker is, they have like Smosh and they used to have Ray William Johnson and Epic Rap Battles of History. Basically, they're the production branch and then Polaris is the video game branch. And together, those two networks are... That's the largest content producers on YouTube, and Disney now owns it.
Yeah. There was a point where, who was it, Fullscreen got like contacted me like, we want to sign you on for our thing. And I was like, oh, that sounds like a good idea. And then I forgot about it. It's been like 4 months. It's probably a little late for that now.
It's so weird because I think most people don't look at almost any channel on YouTube that way.
Yeah, Machinima like maybe. Maybe.
Right.
So Disney owns Angry Video Game Nerd.
Disney owns PewDiePie, I believe.
Yeah, owns PewDiePie, yep.
Yeah. Yep. And I think he's like the most popular LPer.
Most subbed. Yeah, he's the most subbed on YouTube.
He's larger than many Mickey.
Quote, unquote, the hotness right now.
Yeah. That's what the kids say.
That is exactly what they say. I think they also, we should break. Let's take a break.
The kids say that?
The kids say that.
Damn kids.
We're back. And we're going to talk about the things that we have been playing over the last week or so. Has anyone been playing anything new?
Let me start because I'm going to need to put a
Imran, why don't you start?
One. So I'm just going to spoil the shit out of Bravely Default. Does anyone mind that?
No, please do. I do not mind it. Yeah, go ahead.
And I'll put a timestamp here in the news post, and then I'll put when I finish it. But I got...
So should I keep playing it? Let me ask you that.
No. Okay. So the start of Bravely Default, let's say the first half of the game, is a story about crystals and a kingdom and blah, 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 Final Fantasy.
Right.
And that's a pretty okay JRPG story. Like, you get to the end, you beat the king, you awaken the last crystal, then you go to this part, and then the game keeps going.
Okay. Like, because Okami keeps going, or...?
No, because Okami kept going in different regions. What Bravely Default does is you start over at the beginning of the game again. Not a new game plus. Everyone still retains their old memories, but and you still have your airship, but it's like, what the hell just happened? Like, did we not just, you know, fix all this crystal shit? So you can mainline through that again and just go straight to the crystals and reawaken them all, and you're getting a little bit more of the story.
Right to the bloodstream.
I guess, but like, then it does it again.
This isn't like Chrono Trigger where it like keeps restarting, or...
Imagine if Chrono Trigger, you had no idea about the fair, you just, you know, you save the queen, and then, like, you beat Magus, and you do all that stuff, and then it introduces time travel?
Oh, okay.
That is what Bravely Default does with alternate worlds. So you go into these things, and, like, the world I'm in now, like, the villains aren't that evil, so... But I'm still beating the hell out of them, and I'm still doing things that are, like, clearly everyone's telling me, like, oh, hey, don't trust that thing that's been guiding you the entire game. It's evil. And none of the characters are like, maybe we should think about what that guy said.
Can I just like, guess what the thing we're talking about here is?
You clearly know what it is, but...
It's the fairy, right?
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, like, the title screen, like, changes once you get the revelation, because the subtitle of the game is, it's Bravely Default, Where the Fairy Flies.
Okay.
And the fairy's name is Aerie.
Yes.
So it just removes the text except for Aerie Lies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's, like, that's the big twist that I accidentally wandered into way too early before, like, the game actually told me I should go there, so I found out she was evil long before, like, the rest of the characters found out.
Were you spoiled, or you just accidentally got to this part of the game?
So you know how in the early part they tell you if you press X too long when waking up a crystal, that, like, it'll blow up?
Yeah,
they
don't let you do that. Bullshit, because I just kept jamming as hard as possible.
In the first cycle, they don't let you do that. The second cycle, they do, but it assumes that they've already told you to do that by the time you get to it. So you blow up the crystal, and Aerie's like, well, shit's broken, and just starts going evil. And then it cuts to finale, and then you go through a dungeon, and you beat her. And then it takes you back in time, like, hey, you weren't supposed to do that yet. Maybe go back to that last crystal. It's like, why the fuck did you let me do that if I should not have? And characters, like, casually talk about these giant plot points. Like, oh, that was me in that other timeline. I'm like, what? No, I don't know anything about this yet. Don't tell me this yet. And the problem with this is not the plot twist. The plot twist is actually kind of cool. Like, there's the alternate universes that people are, you know, slightly different, that, you know, they don't... You can go back and beat up bosses again in the different worlds. Mm-hmm. But in the world I'm in now, there's three bosses that are missing because since the kingdom isn't so evil now, they didn't send these three people to go wreak havoc in the woods. So I can't go fight them again unless I go to a different timeline. And that part's kind of interesting. The problem is it punishes the player for the plot twist because you have to do all this stuff again.
So,
like, you can cut through it pretty quickly, and, like, maybe it'll be, like, an hour and a half to 2 hours, but it's an hour and a half to 2 hours of doing things you shouldn't have to do again.
So it's the JRP version of the generation system in Titanfall?
Essentially, yes.
It's except, like, maybe worse, I don't know.
Except it takes a hell of a lot longer, and there's not a whole lot of like.
Right.
I mean, if you're strong enough, these boss fights aren't going to be an issue. And I don't know if that makes it better or worse.
In Titanfall, when you go to the next generation, you get an XP multiplier, so you end up leveling. By like the time you hit, I think, the max generation, you're leveling at like 300% XP or something like that.
And keep in mind, this is the revised version of the game that we got in America. In previous version that released in Japan, there was no way to turn off battles or make battles faster. So you had to essentially go through the entire game. Like, you skipped some stuff. You didn't have to go through certain numbers of things, but you more or less had to go through the entire game again.
It sounds like a lot of busy work.
It is a lot of busy work, and I'm not sure it's when researching it, I was complaining on Twitter a lot about it. People were saying, well, they were trying to prove a point. It just backfired completely. And I can kind of see what they're doing. Like, it's this very Bioshock, like, look, this is a video game and you're just doing what you're told to. You're backtracking through a bunch of other things and repeating the same actions ad nauseum because somebody's telling you to do it.
So did you have a chance to read this, this little, you know, quote or interview from Square Enix president Yosuke Masuda?
That he was saying that they were going to concentrate on core RPGs and they didn't realize that Americans want JRPGs anymore.
Right, right. That they feel that when they were targeting, you know, a global audience, they ended up making games that, yeah, I guess, lost their focus or whatever.
Yeah, I can see that. And that's probably a direct reaction to Thief not doing well.
He directly, you know, mentions how...
I mean, he says JRPGs well, too.
Like Bravely Default did well in the U.S.
And that's probably part of it, is that Lightning Returns did not sell as well as Bravely Default did. Lightning Returns is on two systems and was... So
the second you said Lightning, my brain immediately predicted you saying Lightning McQueen, which is the Cars character, because my son loves that show. So anyways.
What is it with kids in that movie? Like, everyone I know...
You know what? He hasn't seen the movie. Parker has not seen the Cars movie. But, like, there's this collection of short starring Tow Mater, the tow truck guy. And he loves that so much. It's like, his favorite thing to watch.
Everyone dies a little inside when you say Tow Mater out loud.
I'm dying... Anyways, go on.
I'm going to finish this game because I need to, like, there has to be some sort of payoff at the end of this. Like, there's no way that they'd do this and, like, not give you something.
We'll check back with you in 5 years when you're still playing it.
See, it reminds me of, there's this anime series called Haruhi, or Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumi or something. And in the second season, they did this thing where for 8 episodes in a row, it was the exact same episode with one or two small things changed.
Well, you know,
8 episodes.
Did they run this because we went out of money, or they're just...
No, it was well-funded. It's just, this is what they wanted to do. They were trying to prove a point.
The show is about a character who can alter reality. At least that's kind of like the setup to it. So the idea that she might make smaller alterations by season 2 is kind of more of a revelation than anything in the first season, which is big changes.
The thing is, like, that those episodes on DVD... they sold amazingly.
So, I mean, the obvious answer here is cost saving. Like, I'm remembering any number of you know, 80s kids TV show, like Exo Squad. You guys remember Exo Squad?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, where I'm sure, like, 8 minutes of every 24, you know, minute episode or whatever was exactly the same, because it was the intro, it was the outro, and then, like, maybe a total of 3 minutes or 4 minutes in the middle of them snapping on their exosuits, which is the same footage used every single time.
I mean, Digimon, Pokemon, all
right. That. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Voltron.
Super Y.
See, I think they wanted to make...
Super Y.
They wanted to make...
You know what I'm talking about, right, Matt?
Who's got the power? Yeah, I know.
He's the guy. Yeah, and it's the same, you know, like the first 5 minutes of that show, 5 or 7 minutes is exactly the same.
Super Readers Roll Call. Oh, God. 2 minutes
with
of this.
With the power to spell. He's the guy. He's the fucking guy. Sorry, everyone, go on.
So I think the ultimate problem here is they wanted a 70-hour JRPG when it should have been 40 hours. And I think we need to get out of that idea where a JRPG needs to justify its length, because then you get really bad shit like this.
Now, if it had ended where it ended, would you have been happy with Bravely Default?
I think I think it would have been a very simple JRPG that way. I think they could have done that and the twist in a much more reasonable way without making the player go through all that stuff again.
Do you think they were trying to just recapture the stuff from like Chrono Trigger? Because
the writer apparently he does stuff like he did a Steins Gate game, and that had basically the same plot twist. The difference is that stuff works in visual novels really well. Like 999 pulls that off really well. It doesn't work when you have to, when you are the arbiter of the story or arbiter of the gameplay, when you are deciding where this character goes and how they get there and have to go through it, it makes it a much more tedious experience.
You're just going to min-max it.
Have there been any, JA RPGs? I'm thinking of like, you know, an action RPG like Grim Dawn or Diablo, but with, anime trappings. Sort of loot systems and stuff like that.
I mean, Tails is close. The Sega Detective games.
All the last story games that Sega made.
Kingdom Hearts.
I guess, all right, for the computer.
For the computer. Well, that, yeah, I don't know.
Tough. Okay.
They're only just now taking, like, JRPGs and putting them on PC.
Yeah.
There has to be something on your 3DS that you can play along those lines.
Well, no, I'm thinking about, I don't know, because, you know, cause sure, the anime visual style and kind of crazy over the top is enjoyable. It can be fun.
I mean, I can say the one answer that nobody wants to actually say. Dark Souls.
Yeah, it doesn't have that same art style that he's looking for.
No. I'm thinking more like, because that's a lot more finesse combat. I'm thinking about click.
Okay. You want loot.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, sure. Maybe. I don't know. Anyways, well, that's interesting. I don't know.
I've also been playing Mercenary Kings.
Because that's that actually released, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Because I know, I think Behemoth, who, I don't know, he's probably been on the Jumpcast before.
Yeah, Robin.
Yeah, I know he was playing the early access version for a while, and I think I saw him talking about it off and on.
He backed Kickstarter, and they gave him a bunch of codes, so gave me one of them.
Why didn't he give me one?
I think because I bought him Dust, and then.
Yeah, but I have a birthday coming up.
Oh, that's true. You should yell at him about it.
I'm just kidding. Michael.
If I buy him Dust, will he give me a key?
Yes. I'm pretty sure that's how it works.
Yeah, cool.
You got any dust around your apartment, Mark?
Not anymore. I use it all in Hearthstone, so no more dust.
So, comparisons to Metal Slug end pretty much at the gameplay. Like, it looks a lot like Metal Slug.
Right. I mean, visually, it's really, really, really beautiful.
But, like, actual, like, you know, moving forward and shooting things, it's not nearly as hectic.
Is it good or bad?
Is it fun?
I mean, it's okay. It's like, consider it like a Metroidvania more than sort of a Metroidvania.
It's like everything I hear somebody say something good about it, it's really qualified and crouched in a bunch of yeah buts. I've not said anyone say anything really great about this game.
There's a lot of customization, but the actual act of playing it is not that fun.
Oh, okay. That's too bad. So there's like a gun loot system, right?
Yeah. And like you pick up materials from enemies and then.
Well, and you also, I think you posted a screenshot earlier that implied that there was some sort of like base upgrade or customization.
Yeah, you have a base camp that you can like change and do things with, but I never bother with it.
It's a fun little layer if you want.
It's probably more fun multiplayer. I'll say that. I haven't tried it yet.
And it is multiplayer.
Yeah, it's online multiplayer.
It is. It's a lot more fun multiplayer.
Do you own it, Dave?
Well, I don't own it, but I played about 25 minutes at PAX last year with a couple of people, and yeah, it's a blast multiplayer.
The problem is like all the things I want from that game, like really tough enemies and like the giant mid boss like enemies, they only show up at the end of every mission or end of every set of missions, I should say.
So I want to point out real quick that apparently Mercenary Kings is the free PlayStation 4 PlayStation Plus game for April.
Yeah,
apparently. So
which is when I discovered that I actually owned it on Steam.
This looks like, is this Pat Robertson?
Yeah.
Did you do that? Okay, cool.
You can tell by the fact that every woman, jiggles,
and probably explodes into a billion tentacles as well, right?
Like, when you headshot people, they do explode. Like, their head explodes. It can get kind of gory.
Okay.
But so it's like, right on the cusp of a Metal Slug game without being as fun. Like, I should be able to fight, there should be giant APCs coming at me every second, not just at the end of a 20 missions.
Yeah. You're looking for you. It looks like, it sounds like you want a little more difficulty or challenge. I mean, that might make.
Yeah, I basically need It's just all level design is basically just left or right, then you go through this gate, yeah. Maybe that'll take you to the north section or the south section. And okay, that's fine. Except for the way they like a lot of the missions are collect 10 Baphmodads, and those kinda suck when you have 10-15 minutes.
Also boar skins. Just looking at a video of this, it does look like just comparing it to Metal Slug, which maybe obviously visually the comparison is there, but maybe we shouldn't make the comparison. But it does look a little more stiff.
I mean, it's clearly Metal Slug inspired.
Yeah, sure.
It's not a matter of like stiffness really. Like there's some cool ideas, like the gun weight actually does affect how fast you move. That's pretty interesting, but I want it to be more over the top. Like every enemy is a fucking soldier.
Yeah.
That's just it's boring.
Not even like the Martian guys from actual Metal Slug. You don't have that much variety.
Maybe it changed because I'm only on a third rank of like I think there's 12, and that's in terms of missions. So maybe once I get down there, it'll start. You know, they'll just start throwing enemies at me like crazy, and that could be more interesting.
Yeah.
But I played this game back when it was like super early access, like when you know they first gave out the Kickstarter codes. And that was...
You're talking about Valve's new program, Super Early Access. Not yes. Early, yeah.
Okay. Like the 6-7 months ago when it like that happened. It doesn't feel that different to me.
Yeah.
Like it feels like they should have... They needed a level designer and an enemy designer.
Yeah.
And
Not just a art director.
Yeah. Also, I played Yaiba. And
you, but what?
I won't talk about that too much, but it kind of sucks.
What is...
Yaiba Ninja Gaiden Z.
Oh, okay. Got it. Roger.
And the actual story idea is pretty cool. Like, you were a, at best, mid-boss ninja that Ryu Hayabusa killed at some point, and then Russia rebuilt you.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Like so nice. Now there's a zombie outbreak in Russia, and Ryu Hayabusa is doing his hero thing there. So you're trying to hunt down Ryu Hayabusa in the midst of this zombie outbreak.
That sounds like a really rad premise.
It is a really rad premise. The problem is all the gameplay boils down to is hitting X and A a bunch of times. And then
isn't that every video game, though?
This one down. More than others. Like,
I'm just kidding.
That's like not a Ninja Gaiden, sir.
Yeah, it's not a fun Ninja Gaiden game. And also there's like this element system that's fundamentally broken because to use elements, you need to grab a weapon from an enemy. And to grab a weapon from an enemy, you need to execute them. And like... The window to execute is really small if you're not paying attention. Like, you could just be hitting a guy, then all of a sudden, I should have hit left trigger right then, and I accidentally hit my sword button, so...
Maybe you should pay attention, everyone.
I'd rather not. It's a decent-looking game, but yeah. It's not... Like, the legacy it's owing to, it's not doing any justice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a full-price game.
Yep, it's $60.
Yeah, I saw a screenshot someone posted on Twitter of the activity on Steam, and there was literally just one person playing it.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, man.
Like, they made no attempt to hype that game or anything, and I can see why.
Yeah. So speaking of Loot Fest action video games, you needed a challenge. I say I have gotten that challenge because I've been playing Diablo 3 Reaper of Souls.
How is it?
It's more Diablo, so it's good. I finally, got my monk, my main character, up to level 60, once it went live, and then worked my way up to 70 playing with my brother and a friend. It's more Diablo. Like, you know, it brought a new class, a Crusader, to the game. And then each class, I think, got like one new power because, you know, they let you go. 60 was the max with the original release of Diablo 3. And then now the max is level 70. So that there's a one act campaign, you know, that you fight death, you kill death, which is whatever. But then they added a new adventure mode, which is a little more like Diablo 2, if anyone played that. So you kind of get I don't know how far it goes. It might just be. You know, you just always can get a random new quest that it'll give you. Just like, hey, go here and kill this guy. And that's like your bounty. And it gives you access to a certain number of, you know, new things, new items, legendary items, stuff like that. But so anyway, because I finally got my character up to snuff and was playing with other people who also had good characters, like I started playing on the harder difficulty modes, which is sort of what Diablo is known for, if you don't know. Especially Diablo 2. So, you know, it goes from like normal to hard to master to nightmare, and then it has torment. And torment has six different levels of torment. So, and
now,
and
past Nightmare, like, you lose your dude, it's over, right?
No. I mean, that's. I mean, if you're playing on what they, I think, what they call hardcore mode, yeah, then it's like a one life. But no, I mean, you can play on Torment as a regular character and have that difficulty, in Diablo 3, anyways. And that's been a really good challenge, because like my character still isn't quite kitted out. Like, I don't have all the right gear yet that I need, because I'm, finding gears. They've upgraded this from what it was. But anyway, so I've been playing Diablo 3 Reaper of Souls. It's more fucking Diablo. So if you like Diablo, it's going to be worth your money. You're going to get plenty out of it. So
is it still always online?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, okay. You need to log into Battle.net or whatever.
See, I thought that part was always dumb, because it didn't seem like it needed to be. Like, I thought the auction house was the main thing, and that doesn't exist.
The auction house is, you can still, like, open it up, but it's gone now. It's, like, they're obviously, it's being phased out. And so they've changed the loot system. So, like, you can't really share things. Like, if you find something while you're playing with somebody else, you have like 24 hours to switch the item, after which it becomes account bound. That item is bound to that, that person's account, which is a little, I don't know. I guess they did it because, like, well, if you don't like the auction house, then nobody can have anything good. And it's not that big of a deal though. But so I've been playing that. It's good. Past that, I have been playing, I started playing Scapegoat 2. Has anyone else?
I have no idea what a scapegoat is. No, I see people talking about it, but like...
Dave, I know you know what a scapegoat 2 is.
Oh, yeah.
I get confused with Goat Simulator.
Yeah,
this has been a really good year for goat games.
There's too many goats. The goat fad needs to stop. Somebody
will win the goatee.
Goatgames.com. Somebody owns goatgames.com.
Interesting. You really don't want to do goats.
I mean, it's done by domain. It's a park domain. But anyways, so it's... It's a single screen 2D puzzle platformer, and it's really fun. It's like, it's got a lot of neat mechanics, kind of boulder dash with like stuff that falls and crush, and you're a goat, and at one point you get a mouse that helps you out, and there are puzzles and switches, and it's just a fun, sort of lighthearted, really beautifully designed. I mean, just from a visual standpoint, but also gameplay. Just very crisp, fun puzzle platformer, and I super recommend it. I've only played maybe like an hour of it, but it's a lot of fun. It's really good. And there, I know Alex Austin, Cryptixy, he was pushing it when it first came out. He was like, "Go play this." He really likes it, and I do too. Yeah. So and let's see. The last thing I've been playing on my mobile device, my iPhone, is a game called Shattered Planets. Or Shattered Planet. A while ago, I talked about a game called Out There, which is a game in which you are in a spaceship and you go through and you have to kind of manage your resources, like your oxygen and your fuel for your ship, and you have to find places to refuel. Otherwise, you just die out there. But the best part of that game, I think, is sort of these kind of random encounters. It's sort of like a roguelike with interesting story elements. Like, you can go to a planet and encounter a life form and you learn a new language, but the kind of resource management part of it led a little bit to be desired for me. But anyway, so the Shattered Planet game takes the best parts of Out There, which is sort of the random encounters, like a different story, a little random encounter thing that you can try out. Maybe you approach it differently this time than the next time and you get different results, and it puts it into a kind of grid-based, turn-based, randomized RPG. And it's really, really good. I mean, visually, it's super beautiful. They knocked the art on this out of the park.
Is everything floating around in space?
Everything is floating around in space.
Looks,
yes,
like a very Bastion look to it with that.
Yeah, yes, it sort of does. And I think they even mentioned Bastion as one of their, kind of inspired the look of the game. Yeah, so it's really good. It kind of takes randomized, Rogue Legacy, FTL, and it puts into this kind of roguelike, just simple. You zoom down to a planet and you get as far as you can, and you have different encounters along the way, different enemies. There's a lot of different gear, a lot of like tribute gears. Like, there's an Oculus Rift that you wear for a helmet that gives you like -5 strength, but +30 what they call wits. I mean, there's not much to say. It's just, it's, it's, It might be the best game on iOS right now. Boom. I said it. I'm done. I'm out. That was me dropping the mic.
Mic has been dropped.
It is free to play. Which I mean, you guys know is a point of contention for me. It's usually an instant turnoff for me, but it's very well balanced. I do not feel at all like I need to buy any of the packs. There's a $3 in-app purchase for what they call a crystal tripler. Crystals are like one of the two currencies in the game that you use to, you know, forge gear or create random gear. And, without it, it's, you know, the game is passable. With it, it's perfectly balanced. Like, so you basically, if you bought the game for $3, this, you get a perfectly well-balanced game. So
you kind of like the free-to-play version, kind of like a demo of the working game.
Exactly. It's shareware. So, yeah. Well, and, you know, they kind of say this is their first game. They wanted as many people to play it as possible to get their name out there. So they made it free with in-app purchases. So there is the typical, you know, best value, $99. But it does not push it at all. And nor do I think you need it in the game. So it's really good. It's really challenging, which is important. You know, you don't just feel like you're breezing through the game. And I really recommend you go check it out. It's free. You got nothing to lose. I think there's an Android version coming too. It might already be out. Apparently, there's going to be a computer version coming out summer, so that's cool. Highly recommended. Also, I after playing a lot of Titanfall, I installed Brink just to I wanted to visit back to it just to check out the movement system, and just because it was mainly Titanfall that got me wanted to kind of look back at Brink a little bit, and it doesn't stand up. I still love Brink a lot, like just from a visual standpoint in the world they created. And I think I said this in my Game of the Year video for however many years ago, that I'd really love to see a focused version of that. But hey, I forgot that it was, you know, ID and ZeniMax or whatever. And, but yeah, the guns just feel really bad in the game.
Yeah.
The movement system, I don't know, maybe I just had lost touch with how to work. Because I remember when I was playing it, I became pretty proficient at working it. But it wants to be too automated. Like in Titanfall, you're in control. Like you jump, you double jump. If you aim at a wall, you're going to wall run against it. If you, you know, tap jump or hold it, you'll vault over to climb onto something. With this, it wanted to be too automatic, which just made it, you know, a little more finicky and hard and didn't feel as satisfying as, say, it doesn't Titanfall or Mirror's Edge or something. So
yeah, everything about Brink is great, but actually playing it.
Exactly.
The campaign, the way they handled the campaign as multiplayer,
right,
you know,
very similar to
way
Titanfall.
Better than, yeah, but such a far better implementation than Titanfall, the art style, everything. Yeah. And then you got to play it.
Yeah.
And then that's what falls apart.
Yeah, visually everything that I really want to see. Ultra Bright does it. He does a series called Other Places. Have you guys seen that? He basically just, you know, takes video, like hacks out all the GUI from games and just puts together these like 3 to 4 minute videos of all the beautiful places from video games. And I really like to see him do one for Brink because I really love that world and art style they created. It's so good. It's so good. It's such a shame that it botched. So.
Yeah, and splash damage too. I mean, a great maker of Wolfenstein, Enemy Territory, you know, Quake Wars. I mean, they just keep stumbling lately.
Yeah. Well, they after Brink had already been out there for a while, they announced a game called Dirty Bomb, which I think has changed names now.
I think
maybe.
It has.
So I don't know what the status of that is, but it looked like, you know, their attempt at Brink 2. I think basically, but they needed a new branding or whatever. But they also put out a mobile game that was, a turn-based tactical shooter, sort of like XCOM or whatever. So,
yeah, and they did the multiplayer for Arkham Origins.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they did the multiplayer, was supposed to be really good.
Insofar as they play Batman multiplayer, which is for a
while. To Batman.
What do you guys think of the Arkham Knight?
The giant moon.
I mean, besides the giant moon, but yeah.
I didn't actually look at much about it, so I can't say anything.
Yeah, it's Rocksteady. The trailer just did not excite me.
It just, I don't know what it would take to get me excited about another Batman game.
Maybe hang off on Batman games for like 2 or 3 years, maybe.
They claim this is the end of the Arkham trilogy, but I assume that means they're just going to put another name on something else.
Yeah. Then the Blackgate trilogy starts.
We need yearly Batman entries.
Well, what would have inspired me to actually be up for another Batman game was the stuff they were talking about, which was either doing a Silver Age Batman or a steampunk Batman game.
Yeah.
Like, sure, that's a twist. I'll give you a chance on that one.
Yeah, Gotham Gods by Gaslight got canceled. It looked really interesting.
Yeah.
And then
I
assume the Silver Age Batman became Origins, because a lot of those rumors were true, but not enough that like it became... I assume it was just like, hey, we can't have this look too different. It's an Arkham game, and you guys aren't Rocksteady.
Right.
Yeah.
Or maybe instead of making a Batman game, make a different superhero game.
It was kind of.
I don't know that you can make a different one. Like, you can maybe do stuff with other people, but interesting?
In DC, you probably can't. You can't, like. The obvious one is Wolverine, but you can't because they're owned by a different person. But you can. There's other DC people you can use. It's like you could make a Lobo game. That'd be really, really cool. It'd be like sort of like a Deadpool video game.
The problem is no one knows who Lobo is.
Yeah, that's a bit.
Not even Lobo knows who Lobo is.
The game is about him finding himself. Like, I can locate any bounty, but can I locate me?
Yeah.
It's a visual novel.
Turns out he's a lobosexual.
Yes. I love you.
I don't know. Arkham Knight, I'll probably play it when it comes out, because I do, but...
I want to see that first-person Avengers game
that THQ pitch.
Yeah.
And then it turned out there was no actual Avengers game.
Fuckers. First-person Batman.
Marvel does not tie in, they had their Sega deal for a while, and Sega produced nothing but shit. And then they have not, made a whole lot of video games about their... there's Lego Marvel, which I find really boring. But I find all the Lego games boring.
I'm sure they find it really profitable, though.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
In
fact, stacking money is not boring at all. Aside from the fact they already have a lot of money, so it probably doesn't interest them too much. Yeah.
Well, what about you, Mark? Do you have power yet, for real power?
Don't have real power yet. What I do have is Hearthstone.
It's been a quarter of a year without power?
Yes, I'm well aware of this fact. Yes.
Jesus Christ. How is your landlord not in jail?
Yeah, I ask myself this quite often. I'm sure.
Did you ask a cop?
I'm sure he probably can't answer that question himself. Particularly my landlord and ask, hey, shouldn't you be in jail? He'd probably say, yes, I probably should be in jail at this very point in time. So I have Hearthstone.
Yeah.
What I don't have is dust anymore in Hearthstone. Dust is the stuff you use to make.
What are you going to give Mike?
Yeah.
You're supposed to give Mike some dust, and then
so he can give me Mercenary Kings.
Yeah.
Oh no! Not that this is different dust. This is card dust.
Oh, you're talking about card dust.
Yeah. In Hearthstone, if you have extras of cards, you can disenchant them to dust, and a quarter of let's say you have a legendary card. That's the best card of it possible. That's 1600 dust. If you disenchant a legendary, you get 400 dust. So it really sucks. So you have to disenchant a lot of cards in order to get to a legendary. And a while back, I was opening up some packs, and I found this card called Cenarius. Cenarius is the druid legendary. Every class has its own legendary. I found the druid legendary card. So I'll make a druid deck. And for the past month, I've been playing this druid deck, been collecting gold with it, which I've been using to go into the arena, which I've been collecting dust with to actually build cards that I want. And after a couple months, I finally got my druid deck working pretty well. I put it on Friday night, and I won 10 games in a row. It's just kicking ass. I got up to rank 10, which is higher than I've ever been. It's this deck is fucking amazing. So the next day, I go ahead and I finally have enough dust to craft the legendary I've been wanting. His name is Ragnaros. And he's just this badass motherfucker who comes out and deals 8 damage to a random enemy target every round. He's great. So I put him into my deck, and on Saturday and Sunday, I play out of 20 games, I win one of those games. Like, all my, I destroy, whatever made my deck work now does not work because I had to move stuff around to put Ragnaros in there. And now I'm stuck with this deck that
absolutely give him the boot.
He costs all my dust. I have to use him. He's there. He took up everything I had. He's like a college loan. Ragnaros is like a college degree. All my stuff is in Ragnaros. I have to use this fucking guy now. So he's ruined my life. This card has ruined my life.
That's cool. I'm glad you've at least had something that you can sink a lot of time into and are enjoying it.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it is. It's great.
It's a great game.
I forget. Did you follow Hex at all, which was a Kickstarter? I probably mentioned it before.
I probably have, but like this. That's such a generic name. I can't remember.
Yeah, Hex Shards of Fate. Yeah, it's specifically digital developed magic.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, as far as I can tell, but what's really interesting is that it has like a co-op campaign mode. Like you can, you know, do dungeon delves and stuff in co-op mode. Because we had a lot of fun playing Two Headed Giant. I mean, Dave too joined us a bunch of times. So I'm pretty sure this is going to be no. In Magic, I'm talking about. Yeah. And so I'm pretty sure Hex is going to be free to play. I think because you know it's obviously going to have a whole card ecosystem and boosters and packs and stuff that you can buy. It's
free to play. Collectible card games are basically games.
Yeah, so I don't know when it's going to come out. I mean, it's in kind of alpha and beta testing right now, but I'm looking forward to getting into that. Hopefully, with some of you five gentlemen here before me,
totally be up for that.
Yeah, yep. Totes my goats.
It's a date.
It is a date.
This just got weird.
I know. I sucked everything out of the room there.
Just got hot.
No, I'm just thinking about the classic line from. Smang It, featuring Young Flossie. It's a love scene, baby, with no communication. No, anyone? Smang It, let me smang it, girl. Smash
I'm
it
not,
in.
I'm not listening.
Smash it and bang it.
Smang, no.
No?
No.
All right.
That well, sounds skeevy.
So, Matt, what about you?
Well, I decided to give, because I played a Need for Speed game like 2 weeks ago and it wasn't bad, I decided to give Most Wanted You a second chance.
Now, which Need for Speed play game did you play to trick you into doing this?
Pro Street.
Okay.
Did you not see his hit video on NightTrier.com?
Yeah, right, just so he can say it.
It's one of those things where it's like, this probably was a foreseeable conclusion because Pro Street is more fun because it's more simulation and racing based. And Most Wanted is Burnout Paradise minus personality. It really is. It's you're in a city. Go do stuff.
And was this the one where like you raced from like one end of America to another?
No, nope. That's The Run.
Okay.
This is like this is accurately Burnout Paradise, but there's no DJ Atomica or like it's not a city crafted to race around in.
Yeah.
Was this a Criterion game?
Sort of. I think
they're all
lost their
theoretically Criterion games.
Yeah. But the big problem, the biggest problem with it, is that it's got no focus. You're just kind of plopped into the city. They tried to make everything accessible by this sort of side menu for convenience sake, but that means there's no reason to explore the city.
Mm-hmm.
So they made it so that there are certain cars that aren't unlocked automatically. You have to find them in the city, and then once you find them, you can pick them off your menu. But once you find a Veyron, who gives a fuck?
Right.
You know, you're pretty much set.
Except just one.
Except just like car porn. It's like, oh, I got the Mercedes SL or something.
Yeah, and a lot of them are cars you're not interested in. And a lot of them are really obvious. It's like, oh, there's a pier over here. Let me just go to the end of the pier and find whatever car is down there.
Find a car at a pier.
There's a body in this one. Oh, well, whatever.
Yeah. The problem is it's not fun to explore. It's really boring. And they put up a bunch of ramps and billboards you can crash through, but as far as I know, crashing through them doesn't do anything.
Yeah. It's really silly because, like, Most Wanted U has, like, they put in a couple of, like, Easter eggs, like, oh, here's Mario's pipe and stuff like that. Like,
I didn't find that.
Put a straight up, like, Mushroom Kingdom in there, and then that would make it way more interesting.
Or just, you know, have a sound effect when you break through a billboard. Anything. Yeah, just.
I don't know about now.
If you're keeping a counter, show me the counter.
I don't know about now, but I feel like those billboards are once advertisements. Like,
Some of them are still advertisements for other.
Okay, because I remember a Dead Space 3 ad. I remember crashing through.
Yeah.
That's replaced with, like, generic EA, DICE, and BioWare ads.
Okay.
Some of them are your me profile. And you crash through it and you think, oh, this must be keeping track of these, right? And nothing comes up on the screen to tell you that you've done anything that matters or counts. And the problem with exploring the world to find cars is that everything in that world looks exactly the same no matter where you are.
Also, everything in that world is a car.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Everything interacts with its cars.
And all of the traffic in the game is a pain in the ass, but you can just turn it off. It's like, I don't feel like racing in traffic anymore.
Can you also set all the traffic to be Bugattis?
No. You can turn off the traffic, and you can keep, like, it has this time progression. And, of course, racing at night sucks, because you can't see anything. So you just press the day button, and that's... You basically end up taking two things that they felt really compelled to put into this game and removing them so that it's playable at all. And even then, it's only barely playable.
It takes a lot of confidence from the developers in their vision.
Well, this is one of those things is that when they left EA to form Three Fields Entertainment, like the guy who's heading up Three Fields was fielding some questions on Twitter, and one of them was, why did you guys abandon the Wii U? And he's like, oh, it's not our decision. Nintendo and EA wouldn't give us the support we needed, and they totally abandoned us. And I'm just sitting there thinking, I feel for you, and I know you probably have a valid point, but all it would take for Nintendo not to push your game is if they had played it once. It's not that good a game. And, like, its flaws are glaring and obvious and easy to fix. But it's easy to see why Nintendo would not throw a marketing campaign behind it.
The thing that kills me, it's a thing that killed me on all console racers these days, is that I can't play a 30 frames per second racer anymore. It just feels so sluggish.
See, I hear that from a lot of people, but no. There are any number of 30 frames per second racing games that are totally playable, that work...
Playable for you! And then when I play them on the PC, then they're actually playable for me.
Oh, no, they'd be playable for you, too. I'm telling you, it's not in your head that this is unplayable. It's just that it's not the 30 frames per second that's doing it. It's the half-second input lag that's doing it. Like, it's not a problem of a low frame rate. You could play MotorStorm, and it runs at 30 frames per second, and that's totally
playable. I also thought MotorStorm was super slow, so...
It was kind of slow, but it was a game you could play. The problem with the Need for Speed games, though, is like they have the super zoomed-out camera, so it always feels like you're going fast. But that means you can't see anything ahead of you.
And also, I didn't like the Wii U version because this is not the fault of the game so much as it is the fault of the Wii U, but the lack of analog triggers actually kind of bothers me in racing games.
Yeah, I don't think they did anything to account for that. So every time you hit the gas, your car peels out and does a ridiculous spin.
Yeah. And I honestly, that's one of those things where I'm like, why is Nintendo... Like, that's them being stubborn.
Yeah, I don't know if it's Nintendo. I don't know why they did that, because their previous systems had it. Like, the classic controller for the Wii had analog triggers, and the GameCube had analog triggers. I don't know why they took it out for the Wii U. That's still confusing to me.
Yeah, it's pretty strange.
It basically makes big driving games very hard, at least a simulation driving game, kind of hard to pull off unless you just want to put the gas onto the stick, and that's a pain in the ass.
Yeah. The other thing, there are other problems with the game that are really obvious that should have been fixed. Like, you can post photos to Miiverse, but every time you press that home button, it snaps the camera right back behind the car. So you can't move the camera and get a nice picture of your car. You can never look at your car from the outside. You can't really position anything for a photo. So you now have this place to share photos of the game you're playing and no way to take a decent photo of the game you're playing.
Take a nice picture of the back of your car.
It's if you ever go into the community on Miiverse for that game, that's what it is. Photos of the backs of people's cars.
Maybe you gotta put you in somebody's front car if they like pass you.
Yeah, that's the only way you do it. Like, I got a good photo of a Lamborghini once by finding one parked on the street and going into bumper cam on my car and like driving up to it. But that's like the only way you can do it. And then there are other things like the cops don't make it fun. It's not a fun game of cat and mouse. It's a really awful game of I'm trying to get away and they keep spawning cops in front of me.
Yeah, I think that putting cops in a game like that is a bad idea. It's like either it needs to be open world like Burnout and just have fun with that, or it needs to be a hot pursuit game. You can't do both.
They also need to go back to one of those things in Burnout 3, like one of those design principles was that they had these giant, unrealistic signs telling you where the corners were because you're going a million miles an hour in a drift, sloppy racing game. You've got to know where the corners are. Like, they've got to have a visual language for that. This is built around looking realistic. So you're racing down this street, and there is a path you're supposed to take. But when you get to an intersection, there's absolutely nothing telling you that this is the intersection where you're turning. And if you go off course, you miss a checkpoint and lose the race. So it's not like Burnout Paradise where you could just find a different route. In this game, if you go off course, you just lose. But there's also nothing to tell you where the course is.
Maybe so you have to drive better, Matt.
Well, no, you have to do the race three or four times. And eventually you'll learn the route and finish the race.
The other races are alternate universes.
Yeah.
Still think there's something to be said for a game that procedurally generates around the streets that you drive to work every day.
That would be fun.
That would be cool.
So the other side of this coin is that I just got a new phone and I wanted to see how well it does gaming. So I downloaded Asphalt 8, which is free to play. I haven't gotten far enough to even think about paying any money into this thing. But that game plays much better than any Need for Speed I've played in a long time. And it's kind of ridiculous how much better Gameloft is at making a racing game than EA.
So are you saying that consoles are doomed?
No, I'm saying that EA can learn a lot from Gameloft at this point, and that's really, really sad. But what Gameloft did was they made a racing game where you have a track that you race on and cars. You just race on the track with your cars. Instead of weird-ass jumps and obstacles and cops chasing you and unmarked city streets. I mean, it works. And they get the same sort of attitude that EA is going for. It's just more fun.
Yeah.
So that's all I've been playing. I've been playing the set-up Windows Phone game, which is actually more fun than you'd think.
It's
how Cortana set it up.
Teledildonics? Yeah. What?
Tell Cortana to set it up.
Oh, man.
That's what she does.
You know about that, right? That.
Yeah.
We've talked about it here.
Yeah.
All right, Dave, what have you been playing?
Yeah, not too much. I've actually been doing my due diligence to try to get some videos out for a change. So I've been playing Hearthstone, of course. That's a regular schedule thing. Titanfall, a little bit of Titanfall. And mostly I've just been playing the two games I'm doing on a video this week, which is Cube and Star and Arbitrary Love, which I just released that video today, which is, I've spoken about it before. I finally decided to try to wrap my head around it. It's a gaming oddity. But like I said last time, I'm glad it exists. I've learned actually a lot more about it. It's kind of an interesting cryptic puzzle. So, you know, check out my video and you can kind of see some of the things that I figured out about the game and, you know, just my thoughts in general. And after that, I've been playing another game I mentioned before, which was Steel and Steam, which is a really classically styled.
So this is the video game. This is the video game versions of the things that Steve Gaynor hates.
Yeah, pretty much.
Word and ampersand. Word.
Got the ampersand right in there. Yep. I think they both actually do use the ampersand as well. So
yeah,
it is. We're hitting all the right points there. But yeah, that's a classically styled JRPG set in a steampunk world, and it's embargoed until the 2nd, so that video will go up on Wednesday. And it's one of the rare videos where I will tell you I actually hated the game, but recommend it for fans of the genre.
Huh.
But it's a straight up RPG maker. You know, they got a little bit of funding on Kickstarter, did a little bit with the assets, but it's a straight up RPG maker, 16-bit era style JRPG. I hated it so much and wanted my time back when I was done with it, but people who like that kind of game will love that game most likely.
Yeah.
Fans of the genre should check out this game.
Yes. And that's pretty much it. Yep.
Cool. Well, that's it. Next week, we should be talking about Thief, Thief, Stabby Dudes.
Deadly Shadows, I think.
Deadly Stabby Dudes. So we'll be talking about that next week. And, Yeah.
Yeah, I had to find a mod for that game.
Yeah, there are a couple mods out.
Yeah, me too.
Well, why do we need to mod the game?
Widescreen.
Because it's not 1080p.
Right. Yeah. And there's a high-res texture pack and some other stuff too.
Oh, I need to find that then.
Deal with your blurry textures.
If you go to the Steam community for it under the guides, there's one person who just kind of collected all the information about, you know, the best, you know, updated just simple mods for it. So that's what I did. Video games. Doritos. Mountain Dew.
All right.
Bye.
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 Take it easy.